Good evening, and welcome to the 88th episode of Scoliosis Dialogues. This is a conversation we bring to you with leading authors interested in scoliosis and deformity from across the country. I'm really excited for the episode we have in store for you today. We have one of the leading thinkers in pediatric orthopedics and scoliosis with us today. So Megan Johnson comes to us from Scottish Rite Hospital. She's an assistant professor at University of Texas Southwestern, medical director of the Ambulatory Care Program, and as well as the Dorothy and Brian Edwards Fellowship in Pediatric Orthopedics. I'll also introduce my dear friend and colleague, Jeff Mullen, who is an assistant professor, University of Buffalo, assistant program director, and the director of the Complex Spine Fellowship. The paper we'll be discussing today is a repeat surgical intervention following deformity, definitive instrumentation and fusion for idiopathic scoliosis, a 30-year experience. Dr. Johnson, welcome. Dr. Johnson, I wonder if you could share with us just a bit about yourself, where you're from, why orthopedics, and specifically why pediatric orthopedics?
Yeah, sure. So I'm from Rochester, New York, which is not too far from where Dr. Mullen is now. Growing up, my mom was a nurse and my dad was in business, but really it was my mom who inspired me to go into medicine and then orthopedics. She worked for a plastic surgeon and then an orthopedic surgeon. And so that was just kind of my natural exposure to medicine and something I had always had an interest in. And my mind was always going to be an orthopedic surgeon. And that was news to her when I was applying, when I was going through class selection in college and ended up going pre-med. So anyways, I ended up at med school at Vanderbilt University in Nashville and stayed there actually for my orthopedic residency and chose orthopedics because I really liked the patient population. I liked that they were motivated to get better. I liked that there were problems that had a solution and that I could fix and see the fix right in the operating room happen before my eyes. Early on in residency, I was exposed to pediatric orthopedics through some mentors that I had found. And I think my draw to pediatrics was initially that I could do a little bit of everything and all the different specialties within orthopedics, doing peds. I also really enjoyed that there was that kind of continuity of care, being able to see kids from, a young age and following them throughout their childhood into early adulthood. So I found that to be really rewarding. And just knowing you've made a difference in a child's life and really changed the course of their life is fulfilling and, keeps me going every day. So that's how I landed on peds. And I was lucky enough to match at Scottish Rite for my fellowship. I finished that in 2015. And then I went back to Vanderbilt to be on staff there. And I was there for about 5 years and left in 2020 because I was recruited to come back to Scottish Rite at that point. So I've been in Dallas for about 3 years now. And my practice has really coned down to really mostly spine at this point. I probably see 90% spine. I do help take care of the spina bifida population here. And so that's obviously spine deformities associated with that. But then I also take care of the lower extremity problems that those kids have. And then, we do trauma like all pediatric orthopedic surgeons. That's a big part of our practice.
All right. Well, I'm going to jump in there and follow up on your comment being from Rochester and say, go Bills. And then I will transition to actually talking about a paper. Maybe you could give us a sort of a 30,000 foot view overview of this paper, and then we'll get into some particular questions. You tell more about it.
So this paper is actually kind of a continuation of a series that we've kind of developed here. I actually did the previous iteration of this paper when I was a fellow at Scottish Rite, and that was to look at our reoperation rate, or I guess you could call it a complication rate after, an index definitive fusion for idiopathic scoliosis. And so this paper, this most recent paper, is meant to be an update on the last series, looking at more modern instrumentation and seeing if that affected the reoperation rate when you compare it to the more historical cohorts. Our thinking was that with more all pedicle screw constructs and, you know, the vast majority of cases being posterior only, that we would see a decrease in the complication rate in this most recent cohort compared to the older cohorts.
And what did you find? You know, you look back historically at, I think, over a 30-year period, and you've had, one of the few sites in the world, quite frankly, that could do this.
Yeah.
What did you find in your data as you analyzed these results?
Yeah. So, as we thought, this most recent 7-year cohort had a lower overall complication rate. So it was 4% in this population compared to about 9% in the previous 5 years. I think what's interesting is that we kind of unexpectedly found that the rate of implant failure and also pseudarthrosis actually went up in the more modern cohort, which would not have been my hypothesis going into it. We did see a quite significant decrease in the rate of infection, but in that last cohort that was published a while back, there was actually a very specific implant type that was causing some delayed infections related to the implant material, we think. And so it makes sense that in this most recent cohort, the infection rate went down quite a bit. But the kind of mechanical issues we were, biomechanical issues we were interested to find and wanted to dive deeper into that portion of it in the paper.
Megan, do you guys have a theory trying to explain the difference in the pseudoarthrosis rates that you found?
Yeah, I think my, initial theory was that there's some sort of material mismatch or implant density mismatch to the patient's size or bone quality. And so the only thing that really shook out when we were looking just at the pseudoarthrosis was weight. So patients who weighed more had a higher likelihood of going back for a pseudoarthrosis. None of the implant materials, whether it was rod size, rod material, or even like the density of the screws at the very bottom of the construct. So if you had, four, two on each side versus two on one side and just one on the other side, none of that, shook out. And so, I don't know. I still suspect it's something to do with, a mismatch between the stiffness of the rod and the patient's probably bone, but probably need bigger numbers and more of them to be able to look at that.
And implicit in that statement is an unfortunate commentary in society that the BMI of the children is going up over the years.
Yeah.
Do you think it may be anything else technically related? Maybe somehow surgical technique has changed over the time period?
Yeah, I think when I talk with, my senior partners or those who, have kind of retired from doing spine surgery, I think when they are decorticating and, they're being very meticulous about it, a lot of them would use a Kapner gouge and actually take parts of the spinous process and really get good, big pieces of bone, and, they'd strip the spine really well and get it down to big areas of bleeding bone. I think now, my technique, I use a burr and I'm trying to be efficient and I'm burring all the surfaces I can see, but I think there's no doubt I'm probably not maybe doing as thorough of a job as maybe I could be. So I think that's maybe part of it. And I think we also maybe operating on children get lulled into a little false sense of security that, they're children, we look at their spine and it's going to fuse. And clearly that's not always the case.
It's interesting you say that this cultural change, 20, 30 years ago, you had surgery, you were more careful, more judicious. It took you quite some time to get back to full activity. And certainly, it sounds like when you fast forward, to this day and age, kids are getting up much faster. They're getting involved in activities much sooner.
Yeah.
Potentially could affect this.
Yeah, and we certainly didn't look at anything regarding return to sport and the timing of that with implant failure or pseudoarthrosis rate. And I do think that may, that's a good thing to look at, and maybe we're letting these kids get back too soon. I certainly try to let kids get back probably earlier than my, older colleagues did when they were doing this, and that definitely may be part of it. Not something that we looked at, but could be a good thing to study in the future. I also think, we are really trying hard to pull those kids' spines out of lordosis. And so I think you know, as people are starting to think about the sagittal plane more and really wanting to restore the normal kyphosis there, you know, we've gotten to these really stiff rods and try not to let them flatten out during surgery. And I don't know if something about that stiffness, are we making the spines too stiff? Like, is there some sort of stress shielding that's happening on the bone? And certainly this study wasn't designed to answer that question, but would be also something interesting to look at.
I guess another thing I was wondering about that cultural difference is going back to that, was there any difference in sort of operative time or blood loss or infectious rates that you've found?
Yeah. So in this most recent group, the, you know, blood loss is lower. The OR time is shorter for sure. And the infection rate went down quite a bit. And I will say that, again, is most likely related, I think, towards from a move away from the stainless steel material that people were still using. It was there was a particular implant system in the previous group that was seeming to be correlated with a higher rate of infection, and it was a stainless steel product. So there was no stainless steel implants in this most recent study. And I think the infection rate is, you know, along the lines of what people are probably seeing at their institutions.
Are you using vancomycin as part of your routine protocol?
Some people do. It's surgeon, kind of surgeon choice. I use it for idiopathic spines, so really for all spines, but a lot of my partners only use it for high-risk patients or neuromuscular patients, so not in everybody. But
interesting. There is another observation that I found quite fascinating in this paper, that when you look at the difference in complication readmission rates between genders, males tend to have higher rates of readmission than females.
Yeah.
Why do you think that's the case?
You know, maybe part of the like size and weight difference. You know, the boys probably are a little bit bigger than the girls, I would say. Maybe it's an activity thing, you know, depending on what sports kids are playing and how soon they're getting back. I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah. And as you start thinking about the clinical implications of this study, what would you like the audience to take away? If you had to summarize this and say there was one or two takeaway points, what would you like the audience to take away from your paper?
I think the takeaway is overall positive. You know, we're getting better over time. We have improved our implants. We've, you know, improved surgical techniques. I think, you know, we've really honed in on perioperative care and standardizing a lot of those pathways. And I think clearly this shows a nice like change in the reoperation rate over time. I think on the flip side, maybe like a word of caution is like, I think don't get lulled into this sense of like kids are going to do well no matter what we do to them. And I think we have to be careful as we're moving towards trying to be more efficient and quicker and get more cases done and get kids out of the hospital and get back to doing sports and things, that there may be a trade-off there. And I think none of those things, you know, really should go over the top of a really good surgical technique. Fusion is still the key part of this surgery. That's in the name of the surgery. And that's still the goal of this, is to get it to fuse. And we don't want these kids to come back to the operating room. So be efficient and do all those things. But, you know, as somebody, one of my mentors told me, there's slow parts of the operation and there's fast parts of the operation. And I think really have to, you know, slow down and take care with doing the parts that, you know, matter the most. So I think for me, I've thought about the pseudoarthrosis rate going up and really tried to be very meticulous about burring and getting rid of the facets and the cartilage on the facets and things like that.
Well, Megan, very great paper, and thanks for taking your time to talk to us. Maybe one question I'd like to have, and maybe get you going for your night. Looking ahead, hopefully repeat this in 5 more years and get back to us.
Yeah.
Any changes you expect to find out at that point or different things you look at? One thing I was wondering about, and maybe hopefully you include, is some more alignment measurement goals. You mentioned changing lordosis. See if there are any changes there that we can study further.
Yeah, I think that would be great to look at. I think, you know, each of these papers has had a slight little kind of angle to it. You know, the last cohort, we had this kind of bump in infection rates. And so we kind of took a deep dive on that in that paper. And in this paper, we had a, you know, a bump in the implant failure and pseudoarthrosis rate. And we kind of looked at that. And so I would definitely be very interested to see, you know, how is the pseudarthrosis rate doing and in implant failure rate. I'd love to look at the sagittal profile to see if there's anything there that has to do with it. I think, you know, rod contour and making sure you're not putting too much lordosis in the lumbar spine when you go down there and things like that are really important. And so I think that's a great suggestion. I'd love to look at that further and definitely plan on doing it again in the next 5 years, which is coming up.
Fantastic. Dr. Mullen, any additional questions?
No, I think we've had a good discussion here. So thank you again for joining us. Thanks to all the listeners for joining another SRS podcast. And as always, we chose a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you all very much. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Bye.